Blog Talk Radio.
Well, there is one thing that I have in common with Yars Klingsman this week. Seth, do you know what that is?
I don't even know who Yars Klingsman is.
Isn't he the coach of the U.S. soccer team?
Jürgen Klinsmann.
Jürgen Klinsmann. Okay, so do you have any idea what the one thing that I have in common with him is?
You have an E and an N in your first name?
No, I can't pick 30 of the right guys either. Mine just happens to be in an NFL draft.
That was good.
Thank you.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Does this mean that I found – I don't think I did very well either. So
I didn't look at the stats. We'll have the stats next week. But, man, I think I got two spot on. And the rest of them
– I think you got more than that.
I predicted most of the trades. I think I got most of the trades right. Like, I know that I got Buffalo trading out of that spot, so I got that right. I think I got Cleveland getting Manziel, but in the wrong spot. And I had the other trade as well, Kansas City making a trade. So I think I got the trades right. I think I only got like two or three guys spot on. So me and Mr. Klingsman got that in common. 30 guys, I couldn't pick them right. 30 guys, I'm not sure he got them right either. The World Cup team announced this week, and me being the novice that I am, I noticed that there's one guy that I thought belonged on the team, and that's Eddie Johnson, and yet Eddie Johnson nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I guess we do cold openings now. Welcome to the show, everybody. It was a bit of a surprise, but Johnson has not been great the last few years. He's not a good clubhouse guy, supposedly. And when he came back to MLS, the thought was that one of the reasons he'd come back, so he would be a little bit more dominant and be able to make the team. And the one thing while the U.S. has always had top level goalies and relatively top level midfield, they're not a stud offensive team, never have been. And cut Eddie Johnson from, this isn't even the last cut. This is the preliminary cuts. Was a bit of a surprise.
Well, there are 23 people that make the team, 30 people on the prelims. From what I understand, Mr. Klingsman views Landon Donovan as strictly a forward, no longer a midfielder, so that could have cut into Eddie Johnson's spot. You know, I can't pronounce the guy's name. Altidore?
Josie Altidore.
Josie Altidore. I always mess that up. Josie Altidore. You know he's starting. So the question is, at this point, it's kind of like the NHL men's hockey team. Do you keep the guy, the last spot on the roster, for the guy that's good at all things, or maybe you just go for youth, or maybe a guy that is just good at one thing, but really, really good at one thing as a specialist?
I don't know. But the guy they took, Chris Wondolowski, played in, I think, four or five of the last U.S. games, and he scored a goal in each of them. So he's been on a bit of a hot streak. Altidore was awful this year. He scored one goal in the Barclays Premier League for Sunderland out of 40 games. One goal. And he is the starting forward. He did score 8 goals for the U.S. team. And then you have got Landon Donovan. While the way they play is they play a 1-3-2-4 for the most part. And I don't really love that kind of lineup, but that's what Klinsmann plays, and that's what they played for a while. And Donovan is usually the left midfielder. So I don't quite understand, unless they're going to start him on the bench, which I've heard rumors about, but I would be genuinely surprised. Usually you have Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey, and then the third midfielder would be Graham Soucy, a Kyle Beckerman, someone along those lines. And then you have two defensive midfielders, and that's Michael Bradley, who's the best player on the team, and Jermaine Jones. So, there is a decent amount of of firepower. Eddie Johnson just hasn't been that good the last couple years, and you know, this is, it's a surprise, but it's not a shock. And it'll be more interesting when they announce the final team, which I think happens next week, which happens, I think, June 2nd, which is only a week before, 10 days before the season starts, or before the World Cup starts.
I got to get some props for at least bringing this to the table, right? I mean, definitely not in my wheelhouse here.
I am shocked. We have NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, the NFL draft, baseball, and you're bringing in U.S. soccer. Do wonders ever cease?
Well, every 4 years, I get into U.S. soccer. Look, I'm one of those guys. When the World Cup's on, I'm watching soccer. When the World Cup's not on, I'm not watching soccer, and I don't care. And it's kind of like the Olympics, or like figure skating. I care. I care about skiing when the Olympics are on every 4 years. So the World Cup's no different, and I certainly view the World Cup as bigger than the Olympics. I always have. I don't think soccer is an Olympic sport. Then again, I don't think baseball is an Olympic. I mean, there are 100 Olympic sports I don't believe are Olympic sports. So this is the time.
Well, what constitutes to you an Olympic sport?
Well, I guess I'm more of an individual sport for an Olympic sport. I always have been. So, I mean, go back to the original Olympics, like. And granted, we're looking at the late 1800s, but it was mostly track and field, right?
Yes.
Individual sports. You may have a relay here and there, but mostly individual sports. Pole vault, discus, hammer throw, 4x100, hurdles, marathon, blah, 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 over and over and over again. But they're all individual sports. And equally, I have a hard time when, and I've said this before, that pros in the Olympics. Always had a problem with that. So here we are. If these guys play pro sports, to me, they shouldn't be in the Olympics. I take that for NBA basketball, too. So I'm not just going one way or another. I actually enjoyed, even if the U.S. lost, that these were college kids rather than the NBA. That's where I believe the Olympics are. The Olympics should be individual sports. I do love the fact that I get into soccer every 4 years for the World Cup, and that's fantastic. And you know me, I'm going to be sitting there watching probably with you. I did it 4 years ago. I remember exactly where we were. We were at a bar outside on a beautiful June day watching the World Cup.
Yep.
Probably do it again. So probably
isn't it romantic? I'll be coming back from my vacation, I think, the day before it starts. Should be good. World Cup is always one of my favorites.
And I got to tell you, they're doing the draw right now, actually, on ESPN, the FIFA draw. So when the U.S. Group F was just announced, when they get to the USA was just picked. So the USA will play again.
Dude, this happened 6 months ago.
Oh, did it? Oh, they're just recapping us? It said live.
They're doing a 30 for 30 on the U.S. trip to Brazil. This came out in January.
You know, that gets me into my next point that I wanted to discuss with you today. Good segue without even knowing about it. The 30 for 30 on the Bad Boys I watched this past week. And you and I had talked about this, and it was kind of a 30 for 30. You should probably be doing other things because it doesn't keep your interest. I didn't do a damn thing. I just watched the 30 for 30. Unbelievable. I mean, you don't remember how good those teams were or how absolutely nasty those teams were. And while I'm watching this, and I would love for you to chime in, I really think Isaiah Thomas may be the most underrated player in basketball history.
Well,
top to bottom.
We've had this discussion before.
I know, but I've come to grips with I think it's Isaiah.
It could very well be. His teams were, because he never came off as beloved. His teams, though they won championships, were never particularly liked. He was hated by the most popular.
How about liked by anybody except Detroit fans? Nobody liked that
team. He was banned pretty much. He was pretty much thrown off the U.S. Olympic team by Michael Jordan. And, I mean, there is no question that he would have been one of the original members of the original Dream Team. He was one of the 10 best players in the world at that point, or right at that level. And when you look at the greatest point guards of all time, I think most people have Magic 1, Oscar Robertson 2. And then for me, it's probably Isaiah Thomas. You can argue Bob Cousy. For people whose history isn't quite as, don't go back as far. They'll argue a Chris Paul. But Isaiah's teams were not overwhelmingly talented. Joe Dumars was a borderline Hall of Famer. And he was the only one, and Dennis Rodman is a Hall of Famer, but he was not a Hall of Fame player at that point in his career. So there really wasn't an overwhelmingly talented team in an era where there was overwhelming talent.
And I did like the quote, and I don't remember who made it. I think it was Mitch Albom in the show, where he said, "It bridged the gap between Larry and Magic to Michael."
Mm-hmm.
And in the greatest era of basketball, or what was known as the greatest era of basketball, they are largely forgotten.
They are. Because, as I said, when you're surrounded by the three most popular players of the last 40 years, people loved Larry and Magic. You couldn't separate them. People loved them. Jordan is an entity upon himself. I don't think he's ever been a more beloved athlete not from a specific team perspective, but as a whole, than Michael Jordan. And you had Isaiah, and you look at the team that lost in 88, where I remember this game where Isaiah sprained his ankle and scores 25 points in the fourth quarter. In this era, that would have made him a legend. For some reason, it didn't. And maybe because the team was hated. Maybe it was because they lost the title that year. But, who outside of Magic and Robertson, who would you put above Isaiah?
Well, I think that's the point. And that's what I was getting at, was that game today would have been Twitter dominant, like, hey, look what's going on. And back then, you didn't have that. But I think the big reason why that game is not, it's not that they lost the series, Seth. It's that they lost the game. Because if you look at LeBron, when LeBron took control of that game against, was it the Pistons? And scored like 29 in the last quarter?
Yes.
Right? They won the game. When you look at Michael scoring 63 against the Celtics, they won the game. They didn't win the series. But they won that game.
No, they didn't.
No?
They lost in overtime.
Oh, I thought that was the ELO game where I'm thinking of Celtics.
ELO's the Cavs.
Yeah, I know. That's why I just messed that up. I guess my point is when you win the game, you get a little bit more recognition and you become more of a legend. Today, that would probably be less so because there's more Twitter, more people are watching it. But at the time, I think it was more, they lost the game, so who cared?
I also think there was another issue. Then afterwards, what happens to Isaiah? Isaiah is considered, goes to Toronto, does relatively well in Toronto as a coach, goes to Indiana, doesn't work, goes to the CBA, doesn't work, goes to the Knicks, doesn't work, gets embroiled in a scandal with Stephon Marbury, and is considered in many ways persona non grata in the NBA. And, whether that's true or not, it's not as if he did something along the lines of a Pete Rose or anything like that. He was actually a relatively good drafter as a GM, but his trades and his coaching left a lot to be desired. And I think the negative connotation that's come out of that has played a pretty big role in his kind of fading, I don't want to say into obscurity, but certainly not receiving the accolades that he should have received over the last 20 years as, at a minimum, a top five point guard of all time.
I'd agree with that. It's ironic because I think it was about a month ago, ESPN, and I don't remember the author of this article, did a ranking of the drafts of the last 25 years by GM. So which GM got the most value from their picks while he was picking. So you have Pat Riley as the GM of the Heat, but he picked LeBron. So you don't get much value because it was a number one pick. So it basically takes the average of the number one picks and sees how much value that person got over the spot where he was drafted. So who got the most value for their picks? Would you like to guess who number one was overall?
I'm going to guess that it was Isaiah Thomas, since you're bringing this up in discussion.
Spot on. Isaiah Thomas. Now he had his bad drafts, no question, because every GM has a bad draft. Even the Spurs have had a bad draft. But guys that he's drafted: Damon Stoudemire, Rookie of the Year; Tracy McGrady; Vince Carter; David Lee, number 30th overall. He got more value out of David Lee than almost anybody else in that draft, and he got him 30. So as a talent evaluator, he's very good. As a cap manager, he's horrendous. So I think you're right. I think he does get a little bit of flack for he doesn't get any slack for his mismanagement in the Knicks. And I think he's persona non grata in the NBA because of that, but more importantly, he bankrupted an entire league. I mean, that's kind of hard to do. The league has been around for 60 years, and he just bankrupts them.
Well, you didn't answer my question. Outside of Magic and Oscar, what other point guard would you take all time over him?
Well, after watching this 30 for 30, I'm not sure I would take anybody. The one that would be close to me would be Jason Kidd. But I think Jason Kidd was a totally different point guard than Isaiah Thomas.
Jason Kidd was more of a throwback, pass first, good defense.
Yep.
And Isaiah is also to be.
Is Iverson considered a point guard?
No.
Okay. So Eric Snow was the point guard on that team. Got it. Okay.
I mean, you can think
on that team.
No, you can think about a Gary Payton,
I love Gary Payton.
I know you do.
Yeah.
But again, he's kind of that scoring point
guard.
Yeah, kind of that scoring point guard. He's kind of the starter of that scoring point guard, or probably the best defensive of all of them. I know you probably have him number three.
I have him and Isaiah very close. I probably have him number three. You're right. Because I think Gary Payton's defense is far and beyond anybody else in history from the point guard spot.
Yeah.
He was able to do so much.
Mine would probably be, if I had to do a top five, would be Magic, Oscar, Isaiah, Bob Cousy, and then probably Payton at five and Kidd at six. It's kind of hard to throw Cousy in there because he was really the first great point guard. Obviously, his statistics don't really measure up, but he kind of revolutionized the position. And so that's where I think I would go with that.
He's also a point guard you never saw.
That is true.
So, I mean, does that make George Mikan one of the top five centers?
No. But people can argue that.
Right. It's subjective. I understand.
Yeah. You know, these are not for, you know, the five best point guard, the five best I've ever seen. Well, I never saw Oscar. So what am I looking at? Magic 1, Gary 2, Kidd, Payton, Isaiah, and someone else, I would have to think about who the fifth would be to kind of come up the top five. You know, it's difficult. And the the Mikan was even before Kuzi for the most part. Mikan was really in the late 40s, early 50s. Kuzi was still in the early 50s, but also was in the mid 50s, late 50s, and early 60s. I think he retired in 61, 62, something along those lines. So he integrated a little bit more than Mikan did. Mikan was really the initial era of the NBA.
Okay. Well, we're talking about integration, and you know what, Seth, you are doing an incredible job of segueing into the next topics. You've done a great job.
Glad I could be of assistance. What do you have in mind?
So our draft sucked, no doubt. But the draft for Michael Sam was not that bad. Michael Sam integrating, for lack of a better term, the NFL, becoming the first openly gay homosexual player in the NFL. Obviously, gay and homosexual are probably synonymous. I'm sorry.
You know me so well, I was about to say that seems a little bit redundant.
Yeah, a little bit redundant. But the fact of the matter is, there are two things I take away from that. Well, two things that I have a question for you. Number one, well done by the St. Louis Rams for doing it. But I don't think Michael Sam benefited from being drafted at all. Michael Sam went to the St. Louis Rams, which is a tolerant organization, 150 miles from where he went to school. Jeff Fisher is the coach. Great, great organization to be a part of. But unless Jeff Fisher is willing to cut Michael Sam, Michael Sam is not in a good spot because that defensive line is so good that I'm not sure he's going to have a spot.
Okay, I disagree with you. I think it's a great spot for Sam for a variety of reasons, some of which you mentioned. Number one, and normally I don't think it matters where a player goes to play in regards to being near people, near your family and so on and so forth, near your school. But I think considering how supportive University of Missouri was and has been over the last year about this, I think it's positive. I think you have to go to a team where there is a real power structure, where you have a definitive coach in Les Snead, in Jeff Fisher, excuse me, the GM in Les Snead. And also, furthermore, if he went in free agency, you can just see the protests coming about. I'm not saying they're right, because I don't think they are, but oh, they didn't draft him because he was gay. They didn't want to deal with the media pressure of someone who was gay, this, that, the other thing. I think this alleviated that. Also, remember, he is, in the way he was the SEC Player of the Year, this is not that far from where he was being thought. His 40 time is very slow, and he was anywhere from a fifth to sixth round pick. Now, the expectation is if he goes to the Rams, let me finish my point and then you can go. If he goes to the Rams, he'll have the time to really develop to see if he can become an NFL player, because he's not going to have to start. He's not going to have to be a premier player, which he's not ready to be. But he can play on special teams, he can be a situational pass rusher. And you can always use one of those. So I actually think this is a pretty good fit for him.
Okay, the Rams had five guys that played defensive line. Four first-round picks on the defensive line. And then another guy that's a third-round pick. They don't have enough spots on that team for him to play defensive line, defensive pass rusher, whatever you want to say. It's not uncommon for seventh-round picks not to make their team to begin with. So my point was, wouldn't he have been better off being an undrafted free agent and letting him pick the team that he could go to?
Well, you could say that about anybody.
That you just said.
You could say that about any seventh rounder.
I would.
That's not a Michael Sam issue. That's just a football issue.
You're right, and I would, except for the fact that, like I said before, Jeff Fisher, my point was that Michael Sam is not better off being drafted. That was my point. You're right, it could be said of any seventh rounder, but I'm particularly thinking about him because he got drafted. If you're a seventh rounder and you get drafted by the Jets, okay, right now, and you play quarterback, that's a perfect spot for a seventh rounder because the Jets don't have corners. They only have three in the whole damn team that are guaranteed spots, only three for probably five slots, five or six. If you get drafted by the Redskins and you're an offensive lineman, they don't have good offensive linemen, and you get drafted in the seventh round, chances are you have a good chance of sticking around. If you get drafted by the Raiders and you're a wide receiver, since they just lost Jacoby Ford, and all they have is Denarius Moore and a couple other guys, you have a good shot at sticking around. But if you get drafted by the St. Louis Rams, who have four first-round picks on that defensive line, and another third one as a rotation, you don't have a good shot at sticking around.
I disagree. I think he had no chance to start anywhere coming in.
No, I'm not saying start.
I understand what you're saying. I disagree. I think he is Jeff Fisher's kind of player, high motor, big intensity guy, leader guy. I think he will be able to come in as a situational pass rusher. I don't think he'll be a star. I think he'd have a better chance to start on other teams. I don't think that is a chance in hell of that happening in St. Louis. But I think that this is a good fit for him.
All right. So we saw, moving on, we agree to disagree on this. And I guess we'll see come late August whether he makes the team.
Yep.
And the worst thing that could happen is him getting, quote, injured. And I put it in quotes because there are lots of times where NFL players get injured to get stashed on the injured reserve, even for a full year. And I just have a problem doing that in general, but because you don't want to cut the guy. But we'll see. So let's talk a little bit about ESPN's coverage of Michael Sam. Did you find it spot on? Did you find it a little bit much? Did you find it a little bit less than much that you wanted to see more? I assume you saw at least the highlight of it when he got drafted, if not live. I mean, this is the first draft, I'll tell you flat out. I watched every single pick of this draft.
And I saw for the first time in years, I practically saw none of it.
Well, it was on ESPN, Watch ESPN the app, so I was able to bring it wherever I was going.
There you go. It's kind of hard to play goalie while you're watching your phone, although I did have it on my radio. I saw the video. I thought ESPN did two parts to it. I thought ESPN did a good job with the video by not talking about it. Just kind of, look, it's the same reaction that any other player would have when they get that phone call, except instead of kissing a girl, he kissed a guy. Does it make me uncomfortable? Not particularly. I live in New York City. I see this stuff all the time. Doesn't bother me in the slightest. I think it was a nice moment. I'm sure I think he was probably a bit disappointed he fell to the seventh round, but all in all, it was a nice moment. I'm glad they didn't talk over it. And I also thought ESPN did a nice job they compete with the NFL Network for the NFL draft. For the most part, I think the NFL Network does a better job. But they gave, and once this was done, they gave the NFL Network this coverage because they thought it was too important not to televise. And, I had no real issue with it.
Yeah, I agree. I was very complimentary of ESPN giving over the footage. I think they did an excellent job on it. I think it'll be a circus for training camp, which it reminds me of Tim Tebow. And if it's my team, I'm really glad he really didn't get drafted, and not because of anything dealing with him, but dealing with, hey, I'm a Jets fan, and I'd like my team to actually focus for the first time in like 5 years on football during training camp instead of an acquisition. So,
well, let me ask you, which team would you prefer to have on Hard Knocks? The St. Louis Rams or the Cleveland Browns?
Cleveland Browns. No doubt. Neither one's going to be on it. You know that, right?
Have they announced who the team is yet?
No, but they've announced that down to like four or five teams, and neither one of those guys is it.
Yeah,
so,
but somehow this may have changed things.
No, it doesn't. So the way Hard Knocks is being done is it's generally on a volunteer basis.
No,
so,
it's barely
on. Let me finish. Trust me. It's generally on a volunteer basis. However, if no team volunteers, there's criteria that the NFL can pick. Number one criteria is that you haven't done Hard Knocks in the last 5 years. So if you've done Hard Knocks in the last 5 years, you're basically X'd out. You don't have to do it. Number two, you've made the playoffs the last 2 years. So you're rewarded with not having to do Hard Knocks. Given that, there are like four or five teams that still can do this. One of them is your New York Football Giants. Another one is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another one is the Arizona Cardinals. So it's interesting to see those three teams, especially the Steelers and the Giants, who are generally very tight-lipped. That's probably the reason why the NFL Network was gained access to the Giants draft room this year, because they made a deal to say, we'll allow you in, but we don't want to do Hard Knocks. So I don't think you're going to see Cleveland, and I definitely don't think you're going to see the Rams. But it should be interesting who they do pick. Who do you think had the best draft?
Who I think did the best draft? I think the Rams are right up there. I think you get supposedly the best linebacker, the best offensive lineman, and potentially the best defensive tackle in the draft, in Robinson and Aaron Donald. The running back, Trey Mason, as good as Zach Stacy was last year, it's still not a strength position. I wouldn't have minded seeing them go wide out, but I also kind of like Garrett Gilbert from the QB from SMU, who's the Texas transfer. I think he could become a solid backup. I don't know if Bradford's going to be there more than a year. But I like the Rams. The Niners, I thought, did pretty well as well. Niners got a couple real steals late. Getting Bruce Ellington from South Carolina, getting Chris Borland, the linebacker from Wisconsin, who'll take over while Navarro Bowman recovers from his knee injury. Jimmy Ward, they needed a safety. Jimmy Ward was a solid pick. They needed a running back. Considering Frank Gore is 31, but it kind of feels like he's 40. And they took what most people thought was the best running back in the draft in Carlos Hyde from Ohio State. So those are the two teams that really I thought really hit me pretty well. How about you?
Well, I agree with you on both of those teams. I don't think they had the best draft, but they certainly had great drafts, especially San Francisco. I think his name is Brandon Thomas, the guard.
The lineman. Yeah, the lineman.
When you have 11 picks, those are picks you should make. Guys that you can redshirt, like Marcus Lattimore, which they did last year. But that also means that you have 11 picks and you're good. Like, you don't have to replenish. The best draft to me was the Cleveland Browns. So let's take away the fact that Josh Gordon is not going to probably play that next year. Let's take that away, because that does, to me, that's not part of the draft. The part of the draft that they got Buffalo's first pick next year, unbelievable currency. And they were able to trade up and down and use all those picks and still come out. I didn't exactly like the pick of Justin Gilbert when they made it, but I can see the need, especially when today they re-signed Joe Hayden for another 5 years through 2019. They may have the best set of cornerbacks outside of Seattle. Then you go and get Johnny Manziel. You know what? They sold 1,000 season tickets the day that they got him. He's going to bring life back to Cleveland. Will he bring wins? I don't know. I kind of believe in him for some reason, and I know a lot of people do, but for some reason I think he's got it, whatever it is. And obviously John Gruden's going to be his number one fan because he couldn't stop talking about Johnny Manziel the entire first round. I loved St. Louis's draft, top to bottom, Robinson, Donald. I wish the Jets had gotten Ellington. That's the only guy that I was like, Ellington and Martavis Bryant, two guys I really wanted.
Well, what confused me about the Cleveland draft was even with Josh Gordon, they needed another wideout. Greg Little hasn't really materialized. I don't know who they have now at wideout.
Well, they also had Nate Burleson. So, I mean, they had a wideout.
But didn't Burleson break his arm?
Yeah, but he'll be back for training camp.
Okay, but what do you see Nate Burleson, as at this point in his career? Number three wideout?
No, Nate Burleson had 66 catches last year. He could be a number two. Look, when you have Josh Gordon as your number one, your number two, you could be like the Lions. You could have anybody as your number two.
Okay, well, then let's take a step back here. They announced that Gordon failed the drug test during the first round.
Let's understand, they didn't announce it at all.
Well, it was leaked. So either they knew about it previously, or they found out about it.
Yes.
Now, I have no issue. I have no issue with the trade. If they didn't want Watkins, not if they didn't want Watkins, I think they did, but I think Buffalo gave up an enormous amount. So I have no issue in the trade they made with Buffalo. I am genuinely surprised that they used the pick to take Justin Gilbert, but that's their determination.
Right.
If they had him above Denard, they had him above Kyle Fuller, fine. What surprised me was in the second round when you had Marquise Lee.
And they
you
just
had
Kobe.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm with you.
That genuinely, because Cleveland has a pretty good line already. Yep. And that to me, while Betonio was a borderline, I think in my pre-pick, I think I had him going 30th or 31st. I think a wideout was a bigger need.
Well,
and
the way I see Cleveland building their team, and this is, I mean, granted, I'm no GM, but I like to play one on TV, or at least on the radio. And I see the Browns building a similar team to the Jets, where we want to run the football. And we're going to keep running the football, and we're going to keep our quarterback clean. So
who are you going to run the football with?
That's the thing, though. They don't care. It's like so the Jets, right now, let's look at the Jets running backs, right? It's Chris Ivory, who is a fifth-round pick. Bilal Powell, who is a fourth-round pick. Chris Johnson, okay, granted. But let's see what they did last year. What I'm saying is that Cleveland can run the ball. If you have a good offensive line, it's my opinion that you can run the ball with just about anybody. And that's what they figured out last year when they traded Trent Richardson. It's not the running back. It's the line. I mean, you and I have said this, that Emmitt Smith is not the greatest running back of all time, but he did have the greatest line of all time.
And that's fine. And I understand that. But when you're going to have a mediocre running back running into an eight-man front or eight in the box, I should say, not eight men front, eight in the box, because the Cleveland wideouts don't scare anybody outside of Jordan Cameron. And you have the chance to take a first-round talent. I don't quite understand why you don't. And did not take a single wideout in the draft.
If Josh Gordon is not, if Josh Gordon is not suspended, does that change your view?
I still thought they should have taken a wideout.
I understand but does that change your view of what you just said?
Not really.
Okay.
It would have meant to me that you don't take Evans or maybe you don't take Evans or Watkins at four. But to not take one in the second round or the third, not to take one period, shocks me.
Well, here's what I tweeted out right after the draft, and I still think that this would be a great move. Not sure if they're going to do it. Okay, so you have the currency of next year's Bills pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you view yourself as a pretty good team? Maybe a playoff team next year if you're the Browns. I mean, if Josh Gordon's available, I view them right in the thick of things in that division. I don't think Cincinnati's that great. I mean, they're a good team, but I don't think they're a great team. I don't think Pittsburgh's great. I don't think Baltimore's great. I mean, they're all a mediocre group. If I'm picking the games right now, I'm probably picking them all between 10-6 and 6-10. All of them. Haven't gotten through the schedule yet. Don't know the schedule yet. But we'll figure that part out. But if you're the Browns, and you think that you're that good, if you think you're potentially an 8-8, 9-17, do you take your first-round pick next year and the next first-round pick, so 2015-2016, knowing you have Buffalo's next year, and go out and get Jimmy Graham?
And have a dual tight ends of Jimmy Graham and Jimmy Graham and Jordan Cameron?
Well, Jimmy Graham last year was split out wide 60% of the time. Why not even just make him a wide receiver?
It's an interesting thought.
They have the cap room. They have this extra first-round pick in their pocket. So basically, they'd be swapping their first-round pick for Buffalo's, which I'll tell you right now, I think Buffalo's got a worse team than Cleveland going into next year. And then you give up your 2016 pick. So basically, you're giving up your 2016 pick for Jimmy Graham and a boatload of money, but who cares?
Well, the problem I see is this. If Buffalo is somewhere between 5 and 10, which is where I always think Buffalo is going to be, do I really want to give up a top 10 pick for a guy who I don't know if can play outside of a dome?
No, you're not giving up Buffalo's pick. You're giving up your own pick.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you were giving up Buffalo's pick.
No, you can't give up Buffalo's pick. You have to. It's your next two drafts. So basically, if you believe that you're between 7-9 and 10-6 right now without Jimmy Graham, and you go get him, you probably go to 8-8 at the least. 8-8 and get Jimmy Graham and still have Buffalo's pick next year, which is probably between 5 and 10.
I would heavily consider
it. Or stay where you are.
I'll be honest. I would heavily consider it.
Yeah. And the fact that Cleveland is $29 million under the cap and the Saints are only $3 million, you can craft a deal that will get that done.
Yes, you can.
Just my thought. It was my thought right after the draft. I was like, man, they got currency. Let's go see them use it.
Wow. My thought after the draft was, thank God I don't have to watch any more draft previews.
Oh, come on. So what did you think of the Giants draft?
I thought it was okay. I thought I didn't love the Odell Beckham pick. as much as I wanted them to get a wideout or a tight end, I didn't want a guy the same size as Victor Cruz. I wanted a bigger, stronger guy, more of an Akeem Nicks type. And they went for a 5'11", 180 wideout.
Yeah,
who, again,
is it short? You wanted Jordan, I can't remember the guy's name, the guy that went to the Eagles.
Jordan Matthews.
Jordan Matthews.
Yeah, I wanted his type. I didn't love drafting a center in the second round. Your Syracuse guy, I don't know too much. I don't know too much about him, Jay Bromley. I really liked the Andre Williams pick in the fourth round. He reminds me actually a lot of Andre Brown, who they had for several years. Big, strong running back. We don't have a tight end still, but it was an okay draft.
I found it absolutely ironic that in the third round, you guys picked a Syracuse guy, and in the third round, we picked a Maryland guy.
You did. You took Mr. McDougal.
Who I've heard only good things.
Yeah. He was having a great year until he got hurt. So what did you think about your draft?
Well, I hated Calvin Pryor, where we got him, although I will tell you right now, he will probably be my next jersey. Because I like him as a player, I just didn't want a safety. In fact, I hated the pick even more when the Saints traded up with the next pick and got the guy I wanted, which is Brandon Cooks.
Of course.
Hated that. I hated it even more because it makes the Jets look stupid if Cooks becomes amazing and Calvin Pryor doesn't. But anyway, second round pick I loved. I love getting the big tight end. You know I've clamored for a big tight end for a while. And I would have liked them to use that their fourths that they had and traded up and got Marquise Lee, because that would have just made the last 3 years of my life beneficial in that I've been clamoring for him. But I do like Amaro. I don't know a lot about McDougal, but I have read some glowing reports that he's a good cover guy, and he's tall. He's like 6'1". Thank
yep.
God that Jeff finally got a guy that's 6'1". He's going to replace Cromartie, supposedly, which is great. He had a shoulder injury, but nothing that can't be taken care of. He sat out, I believe, the last 10 games or something like that. I didn't like their fourth-round picks at all. They just went for wideout, wideout, wideout. And, of course, they didn't get the wideout I wanted, which was Bruce Ellington or Martavius Bryant. So I think one of those two is going to blossom, and the Jets are going to look stupid, as they normally do. 12 picks in this draft. The Jets do not have 12 spots on their roster for players. So I see 3 or 4 of these guys getting cut, which means you should have used that currency to go up and trade, which they did not do. So not altogether pleased with the draft.
The one that I didn't mind, I was kind of happy with the Taj Boyd pick. As someone who watched Taj Boyd a lot in college, I don't mind that pick at all, especially in the sixth round. I think he got really good value. I think this is someone who potentially really could become a starter. Now, I'm not sure it's with the Jets, but I think that's someone who I don't know.
Well,
the good part
about Taj Boyd is that he plays the same way as Geno Smith, who plays the same way as Michael Vick. So if any of these guys go down, they're basically all playing the same way. So it's not like you have to revamp your offense to do it. So in that manner, I like the pick, because I always think that your backup should be the same type of quarterback as your starter. I don't believe in the change of pace concept, because this isn't like college where you have 100 guys. You have 53 guys on your roster, and those guys in practice play one way. They don't play two. I really don't believe in we'll bring in Michael Vick for Nick Foles, and all of a sudden the team will be better. No, because the team's practice playing with Nick Foles in that style of offense, and now you're bringing in Michael Vick, who runs an entirely different style of offense. For that reason, I think Taj Boyd was a great pick.
Was there anything that shocked you in the draft?
Well, the Jets not picking a wideout in round one certainly shocked me when the wideout fell to them. Marquise Lee not going in the first round. Aaron Murray dropping to the fifth round. Zettenberg dropping, McCallum dropping. But the Chiefs taking a quarterback was great. I would just like one draft, please, one draft in my lifetime where I come out going, good pick by the Jets after the first round. Just one. Because I haven't had one yet. Even when they had Keyshawn Johnson as the number one overall pick in the draft, I still walked out shaking my head. So, as far as other surprises, well, the quarterbacks dropping surprised me. Justin Gilbert being picked that early surprised me. Other than that, I didn't really. Ebron going to Detroit surprised me because, man, that team still needs defense.
It's been 10 years. You'd think they would get a defense back seven at some point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the kicker was they just re-signed Pettigrew. So, I mean, how many balls are going to be out there? They got Golden Tate, they got Ebron, they got Pettigrew. Ebron who can't block, we've established this. Ebron, Pettigrew, Calvin Johnson, Reggie Bush, and Golden Tate. How many football? It's kind of like having the NBA All-Star game. How many basketballs are there? You only got one ball. You got to share. So, I mean, other than that, I think the draft as a whole was good. I'm glad I watched most of it, if not all of it. And I'll be looking forward to training camp. The one thing that disappointed me was I don't like the draft this late. I don't know your thoughts on it, but it's a little ridiculous getting into mid-May.
I agree. No real need to elaborate.
Yeah.
I agree.
So right now I'm watching the Mets play the Yankees in Yankee Stadium after last night's basically Little League game, which was like 9-7, although the Cubs were like 17-4, so, I mean, wasn't all that. Has interleague play run its course for you?
It ran its course 5 years ago for me.
Because I think the fact that they're playing them on weekday night games makes it even less appealing to me.
I agree. I don't think anyone really cares.
Yeah.
You know, it's as nice. I also think it's also the middle of May. I think it's very difficult for people to get that enthused. Even you, who are a huge baseball fan, I think you wholeheartedly admit that baseball in the middle of May is just not that interesting.
They're great. Absolutely.
So, you know, if they're playing in September and both teams are a game out of the wild card spot, yeah, then it's interesting.
Yep.
Right now, it's very hard, and I realize, obviously, this shows my baseball bias, but which is funny considering we're making a baseball road trip in a couple months, but it's hard to be that motivated to care about anything regarding baseball at this point.
Well, the stuff that does matter, the Rangers played the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight in Game 7, which I think is actually going on right now. I'm going to go look for that. And by the way, the guy reminds me of Isaiah Thomas, and granted, I should be noticing this a long time ago, Damian Lillard. He's a special player out there in Portland.
He is, and really has the potential to be a truly great player. He's already shown the clutch gene. But this team is still pretty far away from being where it needs to be, although it did avert a sweep last night in Portland against San Antonio. But, yeah, Lillard's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, by the way, Game 7, first intermission, the Rangers are up 1-0. The Rangers will have come back from 3-1 to win this series if they win tonight, which is unheard of. We got about 5 minutes to go. Would you like to go first?
Yeah. There's we've actually been pretty good about not talking about Donald Sterling because, well, we just don't want to, for lack of a better term. And, you know, this whole all these comments that, you know, he's not a racist, but Magic is not a good role model because he has AIDS, to his wife, to V. Stiviano. This is what I don't want to watch in sports. This is what I can watch the news and find out about. I don't know if Sterling is senile. I don't know if he's just a bitter human being. I don't know what exactly this is. The reality, I don't know why his wife, who apparently pretended to be a health inspector at one point, you know, thinks that she's going to take over this team and thinks that players are going to play for him and that fans love her. I think they're all delusional. And I guess that's what happens when you've owned a team for 30 years and just have that self. You know, I think I hit a home run, but I started life on third base attitude. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I hope to heck that the NBA is able to get him out of the ownership, get her out of ownership, so I can stop listening to them and start watching a really good NBA playoff. That's all I got.
Well, Donald Sterling is reminding me of what a soap opera is. And with all the interview here, interview there, Anderson Cooper here, Robin Roberts there, is it news? No. Is it entertaining? A little bit. Is it disgusting? Yeah. So I'm with you, brother. I'm totally with you. It makes me sick. Do I think it's going to be a long, litigious process? I told you this at the start. I do. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if the Sterling still held the team next year when the NBA season starts. And it will be very interesting to see how free agency runs this summer. Does cash still reign supreme, or do people actually think about where they're going, even if they're offered the best money to go there? I don't really know the answer. So, got about a minute and a half left, and I don't normally do the whole personal thing, but today I think I have to, because 25 years ago was my bar mitzvah.
Aww.
A quarter of a century ago. I realized that this morning, May 13th, 1989. And, you know, this past weekend was Mother's Day. And I'd like to give thanks to my mom because she stood by me all these years in the stupidity that I do. And there's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the good stuff that I do too, through thick and thin, my mom has always been there, as I know your mom has been there for you. So to the mothers out there, I wish you a very happy belated Mother's Day. And I thank you for all that you've done for me, Mom, from bar mitzvah to now, because it's been quite a ride. So next week, Tuesday, the day before we go on vacation to Newport, Rhode Island, which we are very much looking forward to, with a bunch of other people in the house, we will be talking about the NBA playoffs. The NBA finals we should be starting those soon, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Yeah, soon. Within 2 weeks.
Oh.
Soon.
Okay.
So we'll spring upon that and the NHL, who's going to go to the NHL Stanley Cup. So for Seth Kamens, this has been Sean Palmer. Thank you very much to all that have listened, and we'll see you next week.